Do you feel like you're barely keeping your head above water? That no matter how hard you try, meaningful progress remains out of reach? Heather gets that. She battled an eating disorder for years before seeking help. Now in recovery, Heather is here to tell you that positive change is possible even when it doesn't feel that way. Join her as she shares openly about her struggles and small triumphs. Fair warning, though. Heather doesn't hold back. Her candid story may trigger some. But for those wanting honesty, hope, and healing, this is 1% Better with Heather. The information and stories shared on 1% Better are based on host Heather's personal experiences with eating disorders and mental health challenges. Heather is not a licensed doctor, therapist, dietitian, or other health professional. Her advice and opinions should not be taken as professional medical advice. Please consult your physician or a qualified health provider regarding any medical or health-related issues. 1% Better also contains descriptions of eating disorders that may be triggering for some listeners. Discretion is advised.
Hey there, my little gaffers, and welcome to the 1% Better podcast with Heather. So on today's episode, I have T, who actually is a friend of mine. So this is nice. And she is also known as the Aftermath, if you follow her on social media, which I do. And we share a guilty pleasure of certain people.
Yes, we do.
A certain family, because we like knowing that they're more messed up than us.
Absolutely.
So with no further ado, T, will you introduce yourself to the audience, please?
Hi, well, my name's Tina. I speak on what I call the aftermath of abuse. I grew up in domestic violence. I spent 14 years of my life, my childhood, that learning stage where you suck everything up as a sponge, you know? It was just tears, hypervigilance, constantly monitoring. And we got out when I was 14 years of age. And that minute where you're free, happy. And then I started to feel the same isolation and that same silence that I'd lived all my life, because that inbuilt regime of my big chunk of that learning stage was a part of me, you know, but I didn't realize that at the time. It's only over the last 5-6 years where I started to really understand it, and more so in the last 2 years through the Johnny Depp Amber Heard court case, when I witnessed domestic abuse on the main stage. First conversation I've ever seen about it. And it was like I was magnetized to it. And as I was doing that, I was watching hundreds, if not thousands, of other people doing the same, victims, survivors. And it soon dawned on me, this was like a feeding frenzy of people searching for validation, for answers. And it soon dawned on me also that these people like me were just, they just felt like they needed to fight for justice. And yeah, and as the Johnny Depp Amber Heard court case, I've never done social media prior to that at all. I've avoided everything like the plague, but I had this urge to stand up and say no, because I was witnessing like this house of cards of abuse being sort of messed with. And I feel like it wasn't a true representation of what someone would go through, i.e. in my opinion, Amber Heard, that was my abuser, you know? So I felt the need to balance it off and speak, and I opened my mouth and it stopped. So there you go. Sorry, I do talk a lot.
No, that's good. So walk me through whatever you're comfortable with.
Yeah.
Through your childhood.
Well, I was born, obviously, and I had two older siblings at that point, and my mom met a partner. And I can't remember a lot from the early days. However, in the aftermath, I found myself in this situation where I was constantly in my happy home. Okay, so, right, let me start. So my mum was with him for 14 years. And my earliest memory was watching all my toys be set on fire in front of our eyes on the lawn. And this is the mad thing about it, because I was 3 years old when that happened. He not only did that, he dragged all of us out to watch that to punish my mom. And this stuff. So I went out, and that was my life. When you're in it, you're survival. So that was the staple, that was the start, and it just carried on that way, just every other day, constantly on edge, sort of behaving in a kinds of way. You become, it's a regime you live in. It's not a childhood. And that went on for 14 years. And it was when I got out and I found myself in my safe home, but constantly in this anxious state with visuals. Even though I was safe and happy, it was like I couldn't live in the moment because I had all these emotions and fears, irrational, very irrational fears, always waiting for the bad to come. And now I understand it. The bad was always going to come as I was growing up. So I had to deal with this stuff, but I didn't know how to deal with this stuff. I didn't even necessarily connect it to my childhood. It was just, I was stuck in my own head, trapped with all these bad memories, I suppose, bumping into each other. And some days I'd wake up and I was just flatlined, void, didn't want to talk. And I had to carry on because I had this normal life. I was married, I was happy, I had children. And I just couldn't understand it because waking up like that one day could send me like that for months on end. And it was just numb, this feeling of numb. And now I connected the dots and understand that that simply was a case of a trigger that's sent me off, you know, in my understanding. That is, I'm not an expert, I'm not a doctor, I've just had to piece together because, as you probably know, you can tell me your story, but you can't convey the emotions and what actually goes on in your head to how you feel it, you know. And it soon dawned on me, it was a case of I didn't want to be here, but I was too scared to not be here. And I was just stuck, you know? And I realized it was down to me to sort of validate myself and my trauma. And the more I pull it out there and started to connect dots, the more it was using my thinking brain rather than my emotional memory center, which I realize now that I was just living in, you know? So. Yeah, so that was our life. It was Dungeons and Dragons. I can't explain when you wake up in the dead of night because your mum's being thrown up in the other side of the door. And, you know, moments where I was having an asthma attack, and I suffer with asthma quite a lot. And my abuser, my mum's husband at the time, came in and asked if I needed a glass of water, and he came and poured it all over me. You know, it wasn't like we were beaten every day, but mentally it was this tormented state, you know. And I just suppose because of what I've experienced in the aftermath, which I call it, I just want to be as open as I can about my experiences in my happy home. So I know there are people like me that are trapped and stuck and scared who claim their trauma, scared to be that victim. And it's not about being a victim in my eyes. It's about, you know, that's your story. That's my story. And it's never going to go away. But if we become more aware of our triggers, if we accept what happened to us, but not let it define us in a way, it's when you wake up with that void, you can go, oh, I know that feeling. What's happened in the last few days that has put me here, which helps you get out of that trigger easily, more, but you know, quickly, rather than months on end back in that abyss, like I spent a lot of my, you know, 20s, 30s. So that's a lot, isn't
No,
it?
no. So you lived with a narcissistic man. I can like peg that one. I actually just had a psychologist on the other day, and everything that you're saying, so I'm like, oh, this is all going to link up really good. So living in fight flight fear, fawn, freeze, what you've done for most of your life, I've done for most of my life, is hard, because I understand what you're saying about you can never be happy because it's like caveman days when the tiger's going to come around, because you can't let your guard down because you don't want to get eaten by the tiger. So living in that state of consciousness does a whole lot of stuff on your body and like your insides and mental health and everything. How did you know that, or come to the aha moment, so to speak, of this is not normal. I should not be living like this. And I need to get it out, so to speak.
There was a few instances. I've come in my utility room now to do this because the kids are, but when I found myself by this back door here, sort of on the floor, punching myself up the head, and I had everything. I had the husband. We've been together 23 years. I've got three wonderful children. And it was, I just come to, and even little things like going for a walk, and I was walking on the path of a road, and I would not walk up towards oncoming traffic, because I was that fearful all the time that something bad was going to happen, that I not only envisaged in my head grew this story of this car veering off the road and crashing into me, I also had the visuals of me being there on the floor, that injured, the paramedic over me, me going to hospital, my children devastated because they're grieving me. And it's like, how do you convey that? It makes you feel sick in the head that you're creating these stories so strong. And the one time I was in town, and this was the moment for me where it really ups, you know, it just, I can't live like this. And I was walking through town, and someone walked past me, and in my head, out of the blue, they've got a weapon. They're going to use it. It's just crazy. And I literally visualized the moment where they were going to, and where, but this mental thought that grew in my head not only ended there, I had this physical feeling of all the adrenaline surge of where it would. And it sounds crazy, it sounds mental, but can you imagine, and people, that was my PTSD, but you go to the doctor's PTSD, and that doesn't give me the answers I'm seeking, I need this to stop, you know, and I suppose, yeah, and I did go to therapy after that, and it's simple connection of a dot for me, the first connection of a dot, which I did gain in therapy, was when, so I had my oldest son when I was 17. This is the part of the course when you go up in abuse. My two brothers were in prison by the age of 20, and me and my sister were pregnant by the age of 17. It's that urge to get away, to escape, and make your own decisions and not be controlled. And this is, again, the aftermath, because you've been not given the great platform or stepping stone into life, and you just all in your head, and you tend to be more vulnerable and make bad decisions, which only adds to the hate on top, because you don't deserve anything anyway. That's what you've been taught, and it just feeds itself, and then you take on more, you know, baggage into your life. And I went to therapy, and when my son used to go to my mom's to stay over, I used to, the visuals used to be crazy. And it was, what if she has a gas explosion? What if she has this? What if she has that? Growing stories, visuals in my head. Overpacking, a night bag, suitcase kind of vibe. And my mom used to say to me, Tina, you don't need to pack all that. And when I went to therapy, and well, it was the day she actually left my mom. We had years of her leaving, that excitement picking up. And we'd go to my nan's, and he'd turn up, and you knew the minute he turned up, we were going back anyway. So this constant, and the day she actually left, I was like, I'm not packing a bag. Like, little did I know she'd actually come to a point where this was happening. So me, my mom, and my little brother, we went to this woman's refuge. I remember walking across the park It was fight or flight, even in that moment. What if he's behind us? That was insane. And we got to this refuge and I literally had no clothes. I had nothing. I just had the clothes I was wearing and they couldn't have us. So we had to go to a bed and breakfast. And my mum only had £5 in her purse because financial abuse is another key contender. And me, my mum and my little brother were sharing a toothbrush. And my therapist kind of said to me, and you overpack, you know? Can you not see the connection there to why you do that? You had nothing. You had lost your home. You weren't prepared. And I was like, wow. So I suppose I've grew on that really in connecting the dots. I think it's so important to understand these behaviors which make you feel like you're going crazy, but actually it's not crazy because there's probably a link to your past, you know?
And I'll say that you're not crazy because I've had all those thoughts plus more, right? So I'm like,
yeah.
And this is where, and I feel people don't want to reach out for help because
no,
if you told them what was going on in your head, they're going to lock me up. Shit, I'd lock me up, right? Like, no way. I'm not telling you anything because I actually told you what's going on in here. No, not at all.
Well, that was major fear.
And you got kids and shit, you don't want CPS to come into your house because then they're going to take your kids away and like, Jesus. And it's just, and now because we're already in this state, we're making this snowball an avalanche now. And I'm with you when you were walking down the street and you see a car. Yeah, I've had all those thoughts. I'm going to tell you right now. Yeah. And it's how growing up, man. It's how we grew up.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, to rewire neural pathways is hard. And to know that this isn't your fault at all, nor are you crazy. For everyone out there, if you have these thoughts, you're not, right?
No, not at all.
And good for you for going to therapy, because a lot of people, I could imagine being brought up in that household, you weren't allowed to talk about anything. Right? Yeah. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Everything's fine. Do not say shit. There's no telling a teacher. There's no nothing.
No.
Because even if you did, who's going to believe you? If someone stepped in and didn't take you, oh, hell to pay for that.
Well, the right? thing is as well, you know, I'm 40. So this went on in my younger years. It was in the 90s, the early 90s and late 80s. So it wasn't even... The police used to come. They used to take him away. Then he'd be back the next day. Oh, I've lost you. You there?
Yeah. No, I'm still here. If you see it go out, it's okay. Just
okay.
We'll work around it.
Yeah. And even my mom, you know, all the times the police used to come out, and when she actually found the link to this woman's refuge. It was not even half a mile away. And to know all that time that was there in situ. And it was only because my nanny got diagnosed with ovarian cancer at the time that my nan on her deathbed just sort of said, please, for me, let me leave him. And that was, thank God, bless her, that she did do it then. But even then, you know, it was really, you know, in this bed and breakfast, me, my mom, little brother, the trauma bond starts to kick in. He's on his own. He's going to be sad. You know, so I also want to explain to people, because I know there are a lot of moms, like my mom, she touches on it a little bit, but I know if she opens up that whirlpool, the guilt, the mom guilt in, you know, my mom's biggest thing was, you know, she, not the biggest thing, but what kept her there was us losing our home and all of that stuff. And honestly, when we were in the refuge, it was the happiest night of my life, because when we finally got in there, because I didn't have to worry about my mom dying, you know, in front of my eyes. Because there are many times where it went off. I remember the one time the neighbors come in to, and I was upstairs. Me and my sisters and brothers used to sort of come like a pack. Together as our routine, if we were able to, if it was going on downstairs. And the one day, the next door neighbour called Fred shouted up the stairs, kids, come down here. And we were like, yes, we're out. And we got out the house. They literally took us up and round next door to their house. and we realized they left my mum there, which was probably the, so then we're placed into this, we're not there, we're not even, we could stop him doing something, maybe no, we're never going to be able to, but that just not knowing. And we were hearing panes of glass smashing. It was a case of pray and please don't let my mum die, you know. And maybe if we're not there, he will carry through with that. So we used to sit round the table as young children and hope and wish he had in a car crash, perish in a car crash. That was how, that was our conversations as kids. You know, it's a very dark. So all this darkness that follows you into the aftermath, when you actually rationalize what you were doing and how dark that was, it's not so insane. It's actually, it's our story. So yeah.
And a coping mechanism, right? Like it's just one of those things, right? The brain takes us to a place. So when you got out at 14 and then you go to the refuge, where do you go after that?
So we were in the refuge, I think it was for about 3 months. So that was like a crazy experience. That was pretty much amazing because it was a bit like this Johnny Depp Amber Heard effect, which I see. It was all of a sudden I was being introduced to children and other moms just like us who had lived the same, who walked the same, who could finish each other's sentences. Like it was this little home of just, you know, that there was an element of, you know, the bars on the windows to keep them safe, but also to protect them from looking for an escape. It was a very dark but really homely place to be. And after that, my mum got a new home and we moved in there. And yeah, life was just, I suppose it was okay. But then it was as my life started to get better, it started to mentally get worse. And I couldn't, that was just like, what? And I just get angry of myself because why can't you just enjoy your life? What, you know, and it was then again, that was just more hate to put on myself, more guilt. And it, you know, it's a crazy place to live in. You know, it really is when you're stuck in your own head like that. You know, and you tend to become your own abuser. You take the tools that they give you from that regime and you just crucify yourself. I've never really went in the refuge actually. And this is the thing as well. And when I started speaking out on social media, I'd have people comment, my life wasn't as bad as yours. And I think when we went in the refuge, we were looking around all the other women to see if they had more bruises or and it was that physical, when the reality is no one has to beat you all the time. It's that mental fear they have you in, you know. It's the mental abuse. The bruises go quickly, but the scars in your mind don't.
No, and I'm with you there. Like mental, no, thank you. The other, right? Like not like if you had a pick, like the and when you're talking about being in the refuge and the bars on the windows, it is because for some stupid reason, always run back because they have you convinced. You can't breathe without them. There's no way you're going to survive. No way. And you get this little, you get strong for a little bit. And then you're like, no, they're like, no, I can't do this. No, I can't do this. Or like money's tight, like whatever the reason is. And there's a lot of good reasons why people go back. But it, did you get any counseling in there to like undo, like,
I
this
think
isn't.
this is the thing. I think most of the counselling come from each other, the people that lived that story and knew. It was very much set up. Me and, you know, we'd have like little days, go to the cinema, the children did, But it was me and my little brother were sat in an office. I remember this, where the one woman kind of said to me, "If you don't break the cycle, you will go on to be abused." And my brother was told, "If you don't break the cycle, you will go on to abuse." And that stuck with me because actually, my little brother went through the exact same as me. He was a victim of child abuse. And I suppose the older I grew, the more that in, I suppose, the Johnny Depp court case really cemented that for me, where I thought, wow. And at the time, there was a lad who couldn't go in the refuge because he was 16 and he may trigger the other women. And this is a thing, you know. And there are some refuges in the UK which won't. Someone said it on my social media, she went, she tried to get away, and her 12-year-old son, there wasn't. He was too old. It's like that's wrong in my, in the refuge brought a great time in my life, but I think that needs to be had a look at because, my two brothers, I would say me and my sister are more irrational and could be a bit more fly off the handle than my brothers. They got shown what kind of dad they don't want to be. They were stuck in this thing of being a victim, but you're a boy, you can't cry. So at least me and my sister have been able to express our emotions over the years together, where my brothers are sort of just like, nope. That's sad. But the refuge, the one night, I remember one of the women touching on what you were saying about wanting to go back, doing well for a bit and wanting to go back. The one woman, the one night, she had caved and she had contacted her abuser, trauma bond so strong. And the one night she was sat there literally rocking and her two sons were there. And she wanted to go back to her abuser. She wanted to put her children in boarding school so she could return. And it was just as children, we almost were frozen to the core watching this situation. We're watching this woman, grateful that it's not our mom in that feeling, looking at these children, knowing exactly what they're feeling, but also relieved because it's not us. And you imagine that little cyclone of emotion as a child, in how aware you are of everyone else's emotions around you. It's crazy. And I've realized in the aftermath, we're visual people. We read emotions. I can see anger. I can see sadness. I can see vulnerable. We're very, but this, when I didn't understand it, left me really, because if I see someone homeless, I'd be crying in the shower. My husband would be like, "Sort yourself out." Like I literally feel their pain. I've been there. It's just like you're just so your emotions are. It's like a roller. Your emotions are crazy when you've been through that because you read a lot in people.
I think people who come from this trauma are probably the best, like, should have been psychologists. Like, if you want to study, like, someone to like peg someone's personality and tell you how they tick, I think it's like our like little village that can tell you, right? Like, and I think that's why, like, we're very good judge of characters, right? Like, just like, no, I don't want to be your friend. No, I can see right through you, right? Phonier than a $2 bill, right? So it.
No, it is. It is. And actually, that's what I'm trying to get in speaking openly. For me now, it's about rewiring the brain in the way I see it. And I realize now, actually, I must have all that time just been watching and understanding it. And literally, I started opening my mouth on social media, and all this has come out. And I'm like, where was that sat? Philosophically. And for me, it's about validating ourselves, because I think we spend a lifetime waiting for someone to come along and go, "That shouldn't have happened to you. I'm sorry," or "I shouldn't have done that to you." That's not going to happen. It's about us accepting that that shouldn't have happened to us. However, we are the ones who's got to work on us to learn to love ourselves. to be accepting. Because that's the thing, all this time when we're making ourselves ill, it's because we so desperately feel like it's gross to claim to be a victim, you know. Like for me, you know, if, you know, I don't know if about you, if anyone says to you, oh, your hair looks nice, oh no, this is crap, you're literally there. I do it all the time. They go, oh, I like that top. Like, oh no, this, it's from a charity shop. Literally taking that compliment and regurgitating it back out at them. No, don't be kind to me. I can't deal with that. You know, I'd rather be sat in my pit, and that's how I've spent most of my life. And it's learning that actually you can accept a compliment, you can grow, you can make time for yourself to, I don't know, just understand yourself, your story. Be prepared that triggers will come along, but you've got the tools in knowing when that feeling comes. You can navigate that because you understand it, because you've accepted your story and validated yourself. You know, that's my take anyway.
Yeah, and I agree. I don't take compliments, and I'm very much, and I don't know if you're like this, maybe this is why, I love to give gifts. If I love to throw parties. I like to like just give. My birthday comes along, which I love to have the party. Someone gives me a gift, I get really weird, right? Like, I'm like, no. Like I have a hard time accepting anything nice for me, but I want to give it to everybody else. But there's
absolutely
no.
So, and that's like, what I realized. Carry on.
Oh, no. So I was going to say, like, where did that come from? Because that takes a lot of inner work. Like, that doesn't come overnight going, no, I am worthy of love and I am enough. And it's okay to have pride in how I look, and I'm proud of how I look. Because I was never allowed to say, oh, look, I got number one. Well, you're not better than anybody. I don't care if you're number one, right? Yeah, so that takes a lot of reworking. Where did you find the strength?
I think for
to
me,
work on
this
that?
is probably where it's actually the one thing I've never apologized in my life for is my fashion, what I want to wear. I don't want to stand out in a crowd. Never want to stand out in a crowd. However, my fashion has always been my mask. If I look my best, no one can judge me for anything. They won't know what's going on inside. So even as a teenager, I had a colour coordinated wardrobe. Okay, so I love a charity shop now. In going back to the refuge when I had no clothes, there was a Samaritans, I don't know if you know Samaritans, but it's a charity where people donate their clothes for people less fortunate. So there was a charity building next door connected to the refuge for the women. And, you know, so I got to go in there with another girl that was in the refuge and make myself a new wardrobe. Donation pile. It was the most amazing time of my life, and that stuck with me, that feeling. So I now love a thrift store, a charity shop. So, but also with me, it's that guilt-free spending, and I will go and do that. And it's buying anything expensive for myself, I'm like, oh, no. You know, I do that. But with fashion, I've never apologized, but it's always been my mask as well. The power dress is always, you know. And I do have crazily this four color rule with every outfit. So it's a mask. I don't know. It's, you know, it's a symptom of the aftermath, but it's one I've accepted. It's, you know, the worst things to take, you know, but I've now realized that it's not, but I know accepting any compliment or any gain or this is, I feel like we get stuck though, you know, because how can you grow if you don't see yourself or you don't receive or you know, you like to stay stuck in your safe little world, even though it's not safe in here. Like, and it's just like, you're that scared. You're just stuck. And yeah, I've just gone off on a tangent there. I don't feel like that makes any sense, but yeah.
It makes sense. It makes sense. So how did you break the cycle with your kids, and you said like you had a child young.
Yeah.
How did How did you raise your child and then
Okay, so when we was
other
in the
children?
refuge, when we were in the refuge, so I met someone and it was just someone, you know, and that's really sad to say, but I was just at a loss, you know, and so yeah, I planned a baby at 16, planned a baby, you know, my own place, my own baby that I can make it better for. And I adore him. He's now 24 this year. He's 24 this year. And his father was no good. He was, you know, it was written in the stars. It was never going to work. Then, of course, I go most of my childhood feeling judged by the neighbors, feeling judged by everyone. And now I'm a teen mom. I'm a girl going to school with a pregnant bump and homeless again. Because I think my mom was a bit tired at that point. If you're going to have a baby, you grow up, kind of thing. So I was homeless, living in a bed and breakfast, and going to school. So I felt mega judged, the baby bump. And I wasn't with his father for that long, and he started gambling, not coming home from work, and not paying the bills, and I was left in debt. And when he actually went. I was a baby with a baby. I had so much trauma, and I will always carry guilt because I was in this robotic like state. I would always call it, you know, it just every day as it comes. I was scared to go to bed. I had my own home. It's 17, 18. Scared to go to bed. I sleep on the sofa. I didn't know the first thing about cooking. My mom helped me, but it just I didn't feel like an adult, but I had this baby now in it. I used to scare me so much that I was going to fail him. So, of course, this overthinking and the cry. But for some, I got in there, you know, he's a good lad and we got through. We grew up together. You know, we literally did. And do you know what? I think he came at the right time because I don't know where I would have ended up. If I didn't have that responsibility, that fear to get it wrong, you know, that fear to repeat. And then it was just being in I met my husband, my now husband. We've been together 22 years. And he's brilliant. But the fear to repeat and damage my children is the battle that keeps you silence, you know? And even when I was on holidays abroad, and I'd, if you know, because these triggers have come from anywhere, and I'll be on holiday, and it's like, tears coming from my eyes, wiping them away, just carry on, you know? You just robotically, like, carry on through the silent and the bad state, you know? Everything in life was happening around me, the wedding, yeah, I couldn't feel it because I was just stuck in my past. And it's cruel. It feels cruel.
And now, where'd you end up? Like, what's your legacy with the aftermath?
You know what? I couldn't be. I can't. I started speaking and joined up. And just doing the odd TikTok. And that's a double-edged sword with the way we are. Because I put a post up, even now I'm having to battle against. And what I've done with social media, I suppose I've used it as a tool for me because I can put a post up and I'll start to overthink and overanalyze and I have to pull myself back in and go, no, leave it up. And if I do a post where I think it's too, like you convince yourself that you're just seeking attention off people, you know, one of those people. And it's a double-edged sword, social media. It's been really difficult to navigate. And I suppose because people connect to my words and what I'm saying, because so many people are like me and you, and it's people like me and you that speak out and openly about it, which gives them that peace. And the aftermath has grown like something I'd never ever believe. And to know that all of that, my story, if it can help one person, then job's a good one, You know, my mum supports me, my siblings support me, they get it, they understand it, they don't want to be on my TikTok. My mum did for a bit, she did a couple with me, but then she was like, no, it's better off in the past. So I get that. But yeah, I just want, do you know what? I want people to understand, like, if I would have known when we'd left the refuge and someone had said to me, right, this is where you are. There may be days where you're going to wake up with a black cloud over you, but don't worry. It's because you have just come out of this. If it happens, all that time I was sort of just stuck because we run away from that story. That's our past. Like, I'm out of there. I want to get away from it. And we have all these moments. I can't take praise. I can't grow any bigger. I stay as I am. The silence, all the bad thoughts. And it's just that if someone would have said to me, this is going to be a part of the course for you, I feel like when those moments started to happen, a bit like I'm trying to do now, I suppose, the more I speak about it, the more people can connect to that own waking up with that black cloud to go, oh, and think of a post I've done, you know. I just feel like it would save so many people from being locked away for so much longer, like I was, you know.
The guilt and shame and the seven horsemen are buddies around here. Like, they're not like welcome guests. They just show up and break down the door. But that guilt and shame will get you every time. And we were talking off camera about my big mouth. And it sucks being the first one out and being the, I don't know, you get fired at a lot because you are the first one. There's no other target. Yeah. But my big mouth will keep going. There's a reason why I'm here. I shouldn't be, but I am.
Yeah.
And it's above my pay grade to know why. So I'm just going to keep talking.
Yeah, me too.
And that's how change happens. And it always sucks to be the first one out.
Yeah.
Because everyone's going to pick on you and everyone's going to pick you apart and do whatever. Yeah. But one voice adds to two and two yes. gets to three and Absolutely. Three gets to four. And broken nose broken and broken sticks together. That's how I look at it, right?
Yeah.
So building a community is very important, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely.
So you're building your village mm-hmm. and I'm trying to build mine and build yeah. the villages, build the bridge.
Yeah.
So how did you see all this coming though, like with the you're talking about the Johnny Depp Amber Heard, did that
absolutely not?
And I didn't really like follow a lot of it. I kind of know what happened, but I wasn't really paying attention.
Yeah,
but it just kind of like magnet, like you're like a magnet to it, like for some
Literally,
reason
I
you
can't
couldn't
explain
shake it.
No, as soon as I knew the court case came on TV, it became a compulsive obsession. Because I wanted to see it. I wanted to watch this life I had lived. I wanted to see who was wrong. I wanted to see. And before I knew it, I was going into work and asking for a week off work annual leave so I could watch. It was that. I could not. I hadn't been shown anything like this. I lived it. It was like I was seeking to see it. It was like Justice. I was going to get the opportunity to be a fly on the wall, to maybe receive validation. I can't explain. I was literally led. I had to watch it. I don't know what I was seeking. I don't know if I was seeking justice. I needed to watch it. And as I started to watch it, and I remember my husband coming out, because he's been there through my dark days of, you know, and he was like, please don't watch it. Because, and I was like, oh, no, I'm fine. Fine. I had tears coming down my eyes. It was like so triggering, but I could not watch it. And I carried on watching it. And to watch her and him and to see that genuine, in my opinion, you know, I just connected to him so much. And it's nothing to do with him being a movie star. I can't, you know, Johnny Depp was good looking in his day. He's an older man now. It's not like it was that. It was just, I literally aligned with the victim, and that was that. You know, I've said before that case could have been broadcast and I could have had ear defenders on and not heard that man's words blow I'd have watched his actions and behaviours and come to the same conclusion. I could have been blindfolded and heard his words and come to the same conclusion. You know, it's when you spend years in hypervigilance and you're watching people and how just little your body stands up on end, because that's how you survived. That was my education. And I was watching so many survivors all come out, sharing their bruises, showing their bruises to do the same. And it was just like, and I said it, it was just like a million light bulbs had all switched on at the same time. There's all stalking the same case for some kind of validation. And when that case ended, I didn't want it to end. I wanted to carry on, because I realized that I was searching for some validation in him. In the way I sort of deem it to be, is we're very visual people. So the doctors would say PTSD, but when you have someone in front of you saying, this is what happened to me, people start to connect to that, like I did with Johnny Depp. People start to go, God, I felt like that, like I did with Johnny Depp. And it's the language that we speak, because we're visual people. We needed that to survive, and we can connect to that. We will allow ourselves to connect to that pain because it's someone else's pain and we want that healing for them. But in doing that, we connect to our own in a safe way, which is not gross. That's my understanding of the whole situation. Does it make sense?
That makes sense to me, because whoever you could, Johnny Depp, Amber,
yeah,
Joe Blow, yeah, and Jane, it doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Justice for whoever that is,
yes,
is justice for you.
Yes. And that's what, right, people want.
And healing from them is healing for you. And it's, I understand. It's like, I don't know, like you've teleported into them in some weird way. Yeah. Like, I don't know if it's.
No, absolutely. Teleported into them. Like, even
it,
now,
it makes sense to me. Like, I don't have like the biggest vocabulary to explain it, but I understand it.
Yeah,
I can see how that happens.
But even so, you know, I do this and I speak on this, but I went to my daughter's, one of her, they were selling stuff at the school, and this little girl was there, and I could see her crying. Her parents hadn't turned up, and I just become overwhelmed with emotion, and I was like having a go at myself in my head, bring it back, but the tears started streaming up. Like, I need to be here for my daughter. But I literally looked at that little girl crying, and I literally connected to her pain. Mm-hmm. And I was in that moment, it was a moment of like, this is trauma, this is you feeling that girl's let down and rejection, and that's connecting to the little girl you once were. And no matter how much I was trying to validate myself whilst buying popcorn at the stall, I could not overcome that. However, I failed in that moment. And then my daughter didn't see, thank God, because I was hiding. When I walked away, I had that, you know, this is what's happened, which got me, I gave myself that validation, which made me, I didn't spend the next 2 days, 3 weeks in this triggered state because that had happened, because I understood why it happened, which made it, makes it better. You know, I feel like when we see someone in pain, we connect to that, but in connecting to that, we tap into some of our own. That's what I've been doing all my life, I think. But again, I'm not an expert. It's just my understanding of my story.
Yeah. And I always say my pain will have a purpose,
mm-hmm,
and your pain has a purpose,
mm-hmm,
and to be a guide. And experts are lovely. Experts are, they went to school, they make a gazillion dollars. I don't, mm-hmm, but I'm always with the people who have lived it and got out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And those are the people who will always have your back. And in the way I look at it, and I'm not ragging on experts, I'm also paying them to be there, right? When you just got people who understand and have a trauma bond, yes, they're there out of their own free will, right? And it it sparks something in you, like, oh. And even if someone reached out to you and you just said hi, you don't know how far that hi is going to go, right? Mm-hmm. Like, that would have been maybe their own communication for the last month and a half, right? Yeah. Like, I've learned a lot since coming out of my hell. Like, and I used to be very, well, I'm still kind of angry, but I'm a lot better.
Yeah.
I have a lot more empathy. I'll say that and I have a different outlook on life.
Yeah.
And I'm not as judgmental as I used to be. I'll say that.
Okay. That's.
And.
I think for me, I just have a lot more boundaries now. And you know, I do back myself a lot more than I have done. And it's just understanding and accepting the whole of me and the whole of my story. How can you be complete if a big chunk of your life you black out? Good or bad, it was my life. And you know, so like you know, I do believe.
You got to feel it. You got to feel to heal, my friend.
Yeah, my husband calls me sadness out of inside out.
But that's okay. Yes. Feeling emotion is normal. Crying is normal. Pushing it down and not feeling isn't going to get you anywhere. You're going to break eventually.
Do you know what? I'm less emotional now. I'm more balanced with my emotion.
Yeah.
Other than moments like the school, which I will always have, I'm more balanced my emotion and more in control of myself since I started to accept and understand. And also, I feel like that big chunk of my life, my analogy is, we've got all these memories in our head and it's all messy and it's like boxes and it's all strewn. Like, there's no organization, there's no understanding. And like every trigger, like that little girl in the school, I understand that now, so I can put it on a shelf in my head, you know, which slowly you've got it all. You start to segregate it away from your heart and place it up shelves and not have a messy, confused head, you know. Also, when we were growing up as well, I did miss out. My sister met a partner and he was next level to the abuser we already had. So we had then this car explosions. We had a hostage and stabbing situation. And my sister's aftermath become so much more. And that's what we had also. So we had another abuser enter the situation. And my biggest fear, like the gas explosion with my mom and my oldest son going there, the gas explosions, you know, 3 years old, I watched all my toys get set on fire on the lawn. At 8 years old, I woke up to our car being set a light on our drive. You know, it's like all these, and then it was like, okay, so I'm scared of fire. I'm scared of my child seeing fire. Ah, connection of a job, but you know.
Fireworks probably aren't your thing.
No, I mean, I'm all right with firework. You know, I'm all right with that. It's just, you know, and that's the thing. It's the thoughts in your head that you create them because you lived that actual reality. And it's a natural fear of yours, but it's about understanding that's not irrational. It is. Because of the life you had, but it's not the chances of that happening, not so much, you know.
Well, and not, I don't want to sound like a jerk or anything, but it's like cutting off the head of the snake and a new head grows back. So you got rid of first abuser number one and your sister goes and picks like Prince Charming. Like, what a kick in the head. Was there any conversation about that? Like, were you pissed? Like, because I would have like knocked her out. I'm sorry, but like, what are you doing? Like, I understand why.
Well, yeah, but that's
like, I'm not like oblivious to it.
Yeah,
but come on.
But that's like, how. But that's the thing. I think it was written in the stars, you know. And the more I've sort of been understanding of, I started writing a book through this journey and I just wanted to write a book. Like, I've never written, I've only ever read one book and it was 50 Shades of Grey. I'm not going to lie. Yeah, I've never done. All of a sudden, I'm like, you're
Probably last
speaking in
before
rhyme.
I.
Speaking in rhyme. What's going on? I'm writing books. I'm writing poems. My husband's coming and going. Who are you? And I actually said she found her fairy tale prince because, in the current state of her life and what she had endured until then, it was just finding anyone, and anyone was going to be a fairy tale prince. But unfortunately, because you're so vulnerable, because that was your education, you don't know what a healthy relationship is. All you are is desperate to get away from that life that you had. So no matter who it is your prince charming, the bar is not that high, you know? And of course they come in the best thing, and it got really, really dangerous very quickly, and we were under absolute harassment. He smashed up my face. It was I was on the seesaw with my friends, and he came over and he was like, "Do you like the bumps?" And I was like, "No." And he just pashed the other side, and I went flying and landed on the metal bar, split on my face, and he ran away. And it's like, I wrote in my book actually, because a stranger come and saved me that day, an actual hero flipped me over his shoulders. I remember the blood just absolutely just cover all his jeans, and bless him, he ran me and all my friends. I remember it as clear as day. These memories, some of them are as picture perfect. And he ran me to my dad and handed me to another abuser. It's just like, but in that
Well, in
moment,
his defense, he thought
he
he was
didn't
doing a
know.
good
No,
thing.
he didn't know, bless him. But like, it was just looking and reflecting and writing the book, which was really cathartic and actually really healing and really validating. Most people go, "Oh, write a book," and I've had it all my life, journal, write it down, set it on fire. But writing that book was like, wow, you know? And I don't know about you, but when you have a story like this, and you do delve in, or you do open up to someone, you all instantly, because we're sensing a reaction, you normally see their shock, then like, oh. Then you say, "Oh no, too much," because I'm being a burden on them now. I'm making the or the you know in your head you're going, they're not going to believe me, they think I'm lying. You're creating your own crazy. And so of course my abuser number one was all set, the perfect dad in that moment, rushing me to the hospital. It felt nice because the trauma bundler, he's being nice, I'm pleasing him, and he's being my dad and he's looking after me. And before we knew it, I was out of the hospital 60 odd stitches later, operation. And before we knew it, he had a compensation claim signed in my name and suing, and he kept the money. No nest egg for me. Just like,
Oh, geez.
it's just madness. But my sister, bless her, she's faced a lot. She had to go to Crown Court. It was a lot. And she moved back in with us because she had moved out at that point. And she used to wake up in the night. So this is another thing, isn't it? Because I got domestic abuse. Got my sister waking up screaming next to me because blood's dripping down her back in a nightmare, because this was her PTSD. And I can't explain how,
Yeah, and it's when we were talking about everyone has a side, right? Like two, and your sister has a side, your brothers have a side, you have a side, and not everyone remembers everything at the same time, and it doesn't make it wrong, just some people don't remember. For me, I don't think any of my family knows that I have a podcast at all.
They're not.
Haven't said anything.
No.
And it's just because I'm not ashamed of it, obviously, but I'm not going to get what I need from that conversation. So I'm not going to put myself in the lion's den. So
I can totally understand that. I can totally understand that. And As I've been doing it, to begin with, it's my little bubble, it was my little world. No one was going to interfere with what I was doing. I felt good and I didn't want to, social media was my separate little, it was for me for once. And I was doing it and I was speaking openly. I didn't want to upset my family. But I know what you're saying there. I completely understand. Because I told my mum I was coming on here today and it was, oh, okay. Then it was followed by, well, I was around my mates the other day, yesterday, and she was like, we don't understand why you'd want to go there. It's just like, so it's always like this backhanded, like, it's okay. But it's good what you're doing. Like, I love my mom to bits, and that the thing is, that's her journey, but it doesn't mean to say I'm not allowed to be on mine, so that's how she deals with it, and this is how I deal with it, and I'm not going to be ashamed to do it that way. I'm not hurting her or anyone else, but I totally understand what you're saying about them not knowing and the lion's den. And it's crazy how, in that time of growing up, me and my siblings, we were like that, a pack all together, fighting the same baddie. Take that baddie away, you're left with the damage from that baddie, and you're a bit stuck. You're no longer the pack because you've got your own baddies inside your head from that one person. That's how I see it. Do you want?
Yeah, and everyone, you're right, everyone has their own path to walk. I believe it's because, I'm a little bit older than you, not by much, but I'm sure our parents are on the same generation and they're like, don't ask, don't tell.
Yes.
Like, And there's no emotion and that's fine. And
But then, like I said to my mum when she said that to me, I said, but can you imagine maybe 20, 30 years ago, you heard someone speaking about what you went through and you heard that? It's different now.
And I don't know. I don't like me, my mom, my old man, like it. Oh, fun times. But
Family.
It's just, it's one of those. And it took me a long time to figure that one out. I'm just not. Just why open my. It's not in her to give. And when I know how my DNA works, I know how I tick. And she will never be the person that I need her to be. And I have made peace with it. But I am the
Making
person
peace.
that I need me to be.
That in that and that's exactly it, and I think for me, largely, and my sister, we were searching for this fairy tale dream, and almost like a life like the movies, because we had no, I suppose we always dream the fairy tale dream. When you're sat in that hall, it's like, you watch the movies and that's how life should be, because our bar was set so low. It's like, and it's hard to anyone to hit that bar of that fairy tale dream when you've been through all of that, which we all have, and I've just accepted. I had my mum around today actually, and I just accepted that this is our family. We can't get together at Christmas. It all goes south, should I say. We can't get together. Every occasion we all come together, I feel like we've got this dark sense of humor. I feel like there's a lot been unsaid. We all have our own triggers, our own trauma. We got together when my brother come home from Canada, because he lives in Canada, my older brother, and I had a party at my house, a barbecue for him, and just a simple thing, like, we haven't got many photos of his children, and there's a photo of us all sat on the bench in the garden. And me and my sister said, wouldn't it be lovely to recreate that? And it was very odd actually, because my mum come in, she said, I was thinking it would be really lovely as it all together to recreate that photo. Probably not that odd, because we haven't got many photos of us all together and happy with a smile on our face. So we sort of all together, and we said about this photo, and my younger brother was like, I don't think so. Don't think so. And then it was like something had happened to him prior to that photo. We can't remember that. But that's a trigger. That's his trauma. And it's, that's, it's like you all know and you all live the same life, but you've got all these, it's like you never, because you, a lot, you've blacked out, they've not. It's just like you're
Right? It's
strangers, share the
walking
same
it.
story. Carry on.
Oh, sorry. No, it is walking a tightrope. It really is. And yeah, Easter's coming. And I love when you're talking about like family get-togethers. And there is one Easter I tried throwing my sister off the balcony. So that's where our bar, and that was only like for 2019, maybe. So like 4 years ago, right? Full grown adult. That's how our Easters went down. Like I tried to body slam her off the
Oh, wow.
balcony, right? Like good times, good times.
Good times. I've been there,
So
though.
that's like every Easter is don't get the RCMP involved, right?
It's so
Jeez.
hard. It's so hard
It's
because,
funny now, but it wasn't then.
No. And it's just, and I suppose that becomes a massive just sadness anyway in the aftermath of that getting together. Because you're like, why can't I just have that peace and like this happy family? Why is it always got to go to the drama, the trouble? And I suppose that's what, I feel like the aftermath creates a shelf where people can let that guilt go. They can let that just for a minute so they can have these conversations because they understand that it's, yeah, that's just my feels on it. It's literally just my feels that I've created in my head and I'm sharing it with whoever listen. But we had a Christmas where I ended up with my older brother pinning my little me and my sister screaming, no. it just doesn't work. It just I can't explain it. I'll pull it under the aftermath. In various conversations I've had actually with friends, it's the same. It's like this, it just don't work anymore. And that to me is the biggest connection of a dot, because it did when you had something to, in common. You've got all this in common, but yeah, the trauma of it all just creates this black cloud. Like, oh, I did have a nice one though the other week because Gladiators is on in the UK. It's like these muscly people. I don't know if you have it.
Oh, yeah.
And yes, yeah, of course. And my little brother, me and my little brother went to Gladiators when we were younger. Went with a play scheme, but we never had no money, so we were drinking the little milk cartons around by the coffee stand. And Gladiators come back on the UK, and he rang me and he said about Gladiators. And I said, oh, yeah, no. And he went, I went there, And I was like, I know, I was with you. And he went, what? No, you weren't. I was like, I was drinking little milk. He went, oh my God, you were there with me. And I was like, yes, Justin. But all this time, he's been alone in that story, And he was like, oh my God, I can't believe you were there with me. But in his head, he faced that alone and he never. And it was like a bit of validation for him as well. In a simple conversation, which we're scared to have to before,
Yeah, and it's tricky. It's tricky because you can have a really nice memory surrounded by shit. So if you take that peripheral, I can't say that, off, you don't want to see the shit. You could smell it, but you don't want to see it, right? So when you said, "Oh, I had the milk," that would just open it up just a little bit with him, right? So I don't know what happened around the whole situation, right? But that little picture just got a little bit bigger, and that's lovely,
It
right?
was. It really
That's
was a
safe.
lovely moment.
That's safe. Yeah. And so with the aftermath, do people just like write to you over TikTok, Instagram? Do you talk to other people, or are you just basically like put out your life and
I've got a few people that I've connected with on my journey. Do you know what the most beautiful thing is about the aftermath? I will put a post up and I will speak, I'll share something. And in the comments, you've got a community of people speaking to each other. And that's what I love about it, because it's, It's literally they can finish each other's sentences. They're getting that same, not just from me, from each other. And they're getting that feeling from helping another. And it is. It's like the broken, like we said the other day, the broken helping the broken to fix, you know? And I don't think there's anyone better to help someone who's broken than someone who knows broken and have been there and gets it completely, you know? And yeah, so I've got a few and a few really good, you know, success, I would say success stories actually. And there's no better feeling. It's completely humbling. I feel absolutely privileged to be able to do what I do, but at the same time, I'm gaining healing too. And do you know what? Some of the people that comment on my people that haven't been through abuse, they're the ones for me because it's someone who doesn't understand it, but they now know it. And if they come across someone, they'd be better to understand a little bit and they're more aware as well. So that's, I always love those people that pop up. And yeah, it's just sharing my story and the hope that the more, and if someone gets to the point where they feel strong enough to talk, then that will grow, won't it? Like you said, it's the gift that keeps on giving, hopefully.
And it's true, knowledge is power. When we know better, we do better, right? And sometimes some people, if they didn't come out of this abuse land, I hope they haven't, right? But it only takes, and you know how you could tell me one plus one's two, and another person can tell me one plus one's two, and I'll believe another person over another person for whatever reason. We just resonate with different people. So I'm glad that that's going on for you on the aftermath, because sometimes you have to hear it a couple different ways for people to get it through their head.
And
So
obviously,
now,
sorry, carry on.
oh, I was going to say, no. So now what? Like now, where do you go?
I suppose, obviously, as it's grown for me, and we have stories like Harry and Meghan, and that's took a direction as well. And I suppose, because I genuinely feel that in watching it, I've brought up in the UK, I feel it's a broken family in front of my eyes, you know. Pain. We feel that we can. So I've been doing that, and I've been doing YouTube, also speaking. You know, and it's more now. It's like, how do I do the YouTube and show people? I want people to see the aftermath and understand that. So I speak upon that. But I also write letters. I don't know if you see, I write letters to William, Queen. Queen in heaven, I wrote a letter to heaven. But just so people can understand how deep our emotions can get. So they can actually understand that, you know, it's hard to explain. How do I express what I am and what I do and how I speak and take it to a bigger platform and get people to connect to the aftermath of abuse and its emotions, its feelings. And I suppose I connect to that through my letters to royal family, or I could do a letter to the survivor. A letter to is my YouTube. TikTok will always be my home. That's where, you know, I've been humbled enough to get a bigger following, and a wonderful community has grown. And you know what? It's organic. It's been organic. It's amazing. And yeah, I could pinch my, I feel alive, I suppose, in doing it, you know. People thank me all the time, but I can't explain. Well, Liz, if I can get that good out of my story, then and give that back, then, like I said, job's a good one.
Right. And I'm sure you get this too. I get a lot of people like private messages who don't want their names out there, which is totally fine. I get it. Right. That are just like, you're speaking to me. You're speaking to me. If I didn't know better, you were in my house. And that double-edged sword, right? I don't want them living through this. I'm also glad that they found me, who is validating their feelings and emotions, right?
Well, I think that's a scary thing when you're not an expert, you're not a doctor. So you feel, I like to see what I do as glimmers rather than triggering. What I do is very triggering, my feedback's along the glimmering signs. It's sadness, but it makes them feel better. But it is a scary when you are a guide, you're not an expert, and you're putting it out there, and not everyone's living in a house with me, with a husband and children distracting them, in the same place in their journey as me. And it is, like you said, a double-edged sword because, yeah, it is, that is the hard side of it. I've not really, ha I've had a few messages like that where I've had to help people out, then it were, but that's what I said, the beauty is the comments in how people help each other out more. So I don't necessarily feel that pressure so much because there's always someone there to pick it up, and they're wonderful. But I hear what you're saying on that.
It takes a village. And I'm thankful for your TikTok because that's how
Oh,
we connected.
yes, it
Because
is.
the family I was talking about earlier is the royal family, because I love the royal family.
Well, I don't know. They've released now. I think there's going to be an announcement being made in the
I heard
next
that. I heard
72
that this morning, like
hours.
within the next 72 hours or something. Where in the world is Kate?
I know. I feel for her
Poor
so
kid.
much. But
Yeah,
I've got a
like that.
campaign going tomorrow. I stand with Catherine across X. I've literally, so I see all the negative about this
We're
one.
supposed to
Pardon?
post a picture, right?
Post a
Is that
picture
what
of
the
Catherine tomorrow, and it's just pretty much. Catherine loves her photography. I feel like one picture in the hoo-ha that's been around one edited photo, which I can understand. I'm filtered all the time. Yeah, it's my. Why would you not? Like a kid in a candy
Right?
store,
Yeah.
For whatever reason, she felt the need to do that. But after all their years of, and it's just gone crazy over one photo. And I just suppose I just wanted to flip it because I do a lot of thinking outside the box. Grew up doing that, survive, and all this negativity around one photo. How about we flood the internet with photos, which there are many of them where she has been there, and the people connect with her because of that. So yeah, that's why I just figured, how about just like try and make something grow where we speak about photos of Catherine, but many, So that was my way of just flipping it. Because I do like to flip stuff and take the good out the bad.
Right? Yeah. And that's the bad sucks you into, man. Like, way too much. You're going to look. You can, someone said, you can stare at the darkness, but we don't go visit it. I was like, oh, I like that. I think RuPaul said that. Probably it was RuPaul because I love RuPaul. I think that was who it was.
I think when I was at my darkest point of the aftermath and the way I wrote it in the back, it was like a little girl dragging me to the edge and wanting to play at the edge. And that's how I just constantly felt. And that's, that's how I've wrote it in my book because that's how I felt. I was literally dragging me back in. Taking me to the edge for me to acknowledge that pain, and it was such a dangerous. I was literally on the edge, every
But
time.
we're not setting up camp. We're just like turning
Not
and
no
burning.
more, not no more. It's almost like you can go, yeah, I know you're there. That's okay. That happened. I'm all right here. Or if I go there, I can go, you know what? I can't stay for long, so I've got to go and do life. But even saying that sounds insane, but I'm just saying in general, that's, but make it work for you. I don't care. Make it work for you because the places I've been in my head, I'd rather sit here and speak about a little girl taking me to the edge.
Yeah, it's not
What's
that
up?
bad.
No,
Like,
it
you think that's bad? Wait, no, we'll totally traumatize people.
I'm just,
We'll do another video with like wine drinking, and we'll really get into it.
Oh, do you know what?
Oh
I
my
said to my
God.
husband, so I have a glass of wine before I go on. And he was like, oh, I don't know. And I was like, I might like leave some yucks. I feel a bit nervous. And I was like, actually, I don't want to go on a drink. Make
Oh,
a
right?
first impression.
No.
So yeah, if we're bringing drink for next time.
We'll do an unhinged. Actually, I can go live on YouTube, which brings Cynthia into that too.
Oh,
Oh my
yes,
God.
definitely. I love
We'll just have a
Cynthia.
group therapy session, talk about the royals.
Yeah,
What a
absolutely.
whole lot of crazy that would be three of us. Oh God.
Yes, on wine.
Three Musketeers, Three Stooges. I don't
Putting the
know.
world to
One of
rights.
them. Right? Oh my gosh. Okay. So one more time. Hashtag at the aftermath, right? On TikTok.
Yep.
Go and check out T. You will not be sorry. I am so glad we connected. I'm so glad you are a guide. I just know you have so much good to come
No.
out of a shit situation. And I could see the aftermath center in England somewhere. And if
Oh
that
well.
happens, you invite your Canadian friend, Heather.
Oh, absolutely, I will. That's the long game. One day, maybe. I think for me, it's about finishing my book, carry on my social media, helping and speaking more. And yeah, that's home. That's home, and it's lovely to have the aftermath at home, you know. So yes, thank you, Heather, for reaching out, and thank you for having me on. It's been wonderful.
Oh, I want you to come back because now I want to know when the book
Absolutely.
comes out. Then I want the book tour, and I want to go on a book tour.
Yes, we can go everywhere.
Yeah, why not? Why not? I'm
Brilliant.
Canadian. People like me. If I went to England, I'm totally fine. Queen's on
Yeah,
my money too.
no, well, yeah. You have to come over. You and Cynthia could come over. She's Canadian
Yeah.
too.
Oh yeah. Field trip.
Actually, no, I'll come to you because the UK's pretty grey right now, and just I would love to live in Canada.
Oh, well, you're welcome.
Yeah,
Come on
no.
over because we live in two different provinces too. She lives different, so you can visit two. Two for the price of one.
My brother's over there already, so maybe I should come over.
Where's he?
Toronto.
Oh, that's on the opposite side.
Yeah.
So,
So you
but
were spaced
that's all right.
everywhere.
We'll just do a Canadian tour. That's fine. Sounds good to me.
Brilliant.
Well, thank you, my friend. Thank you. And I can't wait to have you back.
No, I can't wait to be back. So thank you for having me. And yeah, been lovely.
That's all for this episode of 1% Better. To continue the conversation, head over to our website at www.1%better.ca, where you can access more stories and resources. We'd also love it if you subscribed and left us a review on your favorite podcast platform. And remember, friends, progress takes patience, perspective, and sometimes a little help from people who get it. So be kind to yourself and others as we work to get 1% better every day. We'll see you back here next week.